This one gon' hit, nigga watch like this. Never had no shit like this. I hop inside my whip and then I flip my switch. Every time I smoke my spliff, I think of all kind of shit. Turn the mic up right quick so I can talk my shit. Never heard no shit like this. Never heard no shit like this. Nigga, this shit gon' hit. Hey, ain't a moment to waste. Every day I wake, I give thanks. Ever since the little...
Welcome. This is the Simply King Podcast. It's your boy Rodney Perry King himself. And you just tuned into the Soulfully Conscious Podcast for Humans, Simply Being Humans. And today is yet again a special one. I'm here in the dining room giving you even more of the crib vibes. I was like, I'm going to keep just giving different settings on all of my solo episodes. I'm on a run right now with my solo episodes. So much I have. We're getting up to 250. Getting up 250. This is episode 241, so I'm excited. But if you don't know, you should know. You can follow me everywhere at Kings_Memoirs. Follow the podcast at Simply King Pod. But today, shout out to the Friend Zone for showing us the way when there's a weird or slow news week, or you really don't know. Maybe you have some creative blocks. It could be a number of things. But you need a good shoot the shit episode. So in my mind, I was like, let me think about what do I want to shoot the shit about. So in recent news, I definitely want to talk about, you know, some of the Black movie and television awards that have been received and highlight those things in this past award season. This recent video and conversation yet again about Amanda Seales and her, you know, to me, is this a good example of bad PR, or is it you, or is it both? We don't know. We'll talk about it. And also giving my take on the most recent controversial Black debate of Black folks against ghetto Black folks. It's getting strange around here, but it is what it is. This is Simply King. Before we get too deep into the crust of the, you know, of the episode, I want to do the vibe minute. And this is a new way of doing the vibe minute to, you know, because it is a slow news week. I was like, you know what? I'm going to give y'all something special, something new with the vibe minute. And I'm going to give you what's new for me, or what's new in general, what I have on repeat right now that I think you guys should be adding to your playlist, and what I'm anticipating. Let's get into it. Let's start off with what's new. And what's new, basically, the thing that's new that I've been playing is Blue Lips by Schoolboy Q. It's been several years since he's released a project. I think that it's a solid, solid, solid ass project. The highlight tracks for me are Blue Slides, Pop featuring Rico Nasty, Ohio featuring Freddie Gibbs, I believe is how you pronounce that, featuring Absol. But the whole thing is a solid project. It's extremely deep, has a lot of replay value in my mind. And I think that that's something that TDE does really well, is they have people that aren't on the surface traditional, just regular, traditionally commercial types of artists, but they always find a way to still present their authenticity. And that is what kind of gets them to cross over into those commercial numbers and that commercial appeal, because they are so unique as creatives. Love it, love it, love it. Add it to your playlist.
Blue slides, I've been sliding through your whole shit. Yeah, presidential rollies, I took big risks. We split the profit with the people, we be all lit. Top 10, 9-10, bitch, we all in. Yeah.
Now, what do I have on repeat right now? It's actually a song called Smile by Tay Koo, featuring Xavier Omar, Daisy World, and Rom Der Fool, off the project Songs to Come Home To. It's a good one. I'm going to let y'all hear a little bit of it. It's fire.
Smile for a while, baby. I hope you find love in my eyes. I hope
it's what I'm anticipating. What I'm anticipating is an album from an artist that I truly, is another album from an artist that I truly admire from his first project. I believe that he truly, truly came out with a classic project. And that's Heavy, the album titled Heavy by Sir. According to his interview on Sway in the Morning, his hiatus his hiatus from his recent works, Chasing Summer, released in 2019, which I think is a classic, if I haven't said it already, was due to a battle that he had with addiction. And he didn't disclose his drug of choice, but he expressed how the title track, Heavy, was an indicator that he needed to get some help. So I'm already expecting for this thing to be deep. Current singles that have already been released are things like No Evils, which is a solo track for him, and then Karma featuring Isaiah Rashad. And the album comes out this Friday, March 22nd. Can't wait. Tap in. Go and pre-save that thing, and let's listen together.
Hey, Jackie Youngest, baby, I've been crazy since the sixth grade. Full clip on my mental, too official for your mixtape. I can paint a picture so wavy to both ends. But lately, I've been burning the candle at both ends.
I remember a time when we would enjoy the breeze.
And that's been your Vibe Minute, okay? Okay, now, jumping right into the crust of things. We've just finished up all of the awards, outside of, the BET Awards, which usually happens in the summer, but a lot of the major awards happen between January to March. And some of the highlights that I've seen from television, Black TV and film are Davine Joy wins Best Supporting Actress for The Holdovers. American Fiction wins Best Adapted Screenplay at the Oscars. Ayo Edebiri swept for her role in The Bear, winning a Critics' Choice, a Golden Globe, and an Emmy for her role. Quinta Brunson wins an NAACP Image Award, an Emmy, and a Golden Globe for Abbott Elementary. She might have got a Critics' Choice too, but I can't. And I think both of them might have got SAGs too. Might have got SAG awards too. They both was killing it. They actually awarded Damson Idris with outstanding role in a dramatic series for the NAACP. And NAACP really did their thing this year. They had a lot of great VIPs and stars. It looked great. It looked good. I think that it might be slow in terms of movement, in terms of the major things, like us having a bunch, we definitely have a lot of shows on television. There's a lot of Black film that is coming out more than previous generations. But I think that we are where we might lack in that being a complete shift and us taking up more real estate there. We certainly are doing our thing in terms of trying to bump up the presentation of our awards, of, press, of content, collaboration, and promo, all those things. Like, I still think that even though with now being, extremely controversial, the Jonathan Majors and Michael B. Jordan press run for Creed 3 was, to me, one for the history books. Like, it was so damn good. They both were on covers. They both had every single interview they did created a viral moment. It made you want to go see that movie. And funny as kept, I think Mia Culpa kind of did that too, even though everybody kind of was already on the field of like, I'm not gonna like this movie. And I understand that, completely understand that. Keeping it going, there was a clip that I'm gonna play for y'all that created a little bit of controversy. And let's chat about it, because I think that it sparked a deeper conversation, which I think kicked off the whole idea of this, ghetto Black people thing, because people took something very specific from his words. They took a very, very specific perspective from his words. So let us play that.
Hello, El Marie with EUR Web.
Hi.
Hi, Corey. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I feel like you kind of foreshadowed your success with the character Adam Brody's get your tux ready, we're going to the big show. And so here we are. So I want you to speak to the importance of being recognized for a film that shined a light on the stereotypes and also kind of poked fun of the stereotypes of black characters in film?
Yeah. There's a Victor Hugo quote that he says, nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And so, you know, I was very passionate about this film. Everybody who worked on this film was very passionate about it. Nobody was there for the money because we didn't have any money. So people were there because they believed in it. And so to be here now and to receive this kind of response is it feels incredibly surreal. I'm so grateful for it. I think everybody on the film is so grateful for it. We didn't have a huge marketing budget, and so we relied on word of mouth a lot, and people who liked the film telling other people that they liked the film. And so, it is, you know, hopefully the lesson here, and it's what I tried to convey in my speech, is that there is an audience for things that are different. There is an appetite for things that are different, and, you know, a story with black characters that's going to appeal to a lot of people doesn't need to take place on a plantation, doesn't need to take place in the projects, doesn't need to have drug dealers in it, doesn't need to have gang members in it. That there's an audience for different depictions of people's lives, and that there is a market for depictions of black life that are as broad and as deep as any other depictions of people's lives. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thank you.
Now, after that came out, a lot of people were basically questioning that he is putting down the idea of, you know, very specific black stories, you know, like he's putting down these like, quote unquote, stories that show us in the hood, show real, which are real perspectives, which are real black people's stories. And that's not what we need more. And that's not what we need. And I think people were unintentionally misinterpreting what he was saying. What I got from what Cora Jefferson really was going on to say is that that isn't what needs to be the only thing that needs to be propelled. And we can question those things. We can question why those things are the things that are being greenlit more than anything. And I think that because black film and television, we are forever fighting for real estate, fighting for space in the market, it feels like when it's one thing that's on, it kind of does feel like people see it as it's taking place than another, you know? Or better yet, when it is something that isn't quote unquote like a BMF or Power or something like that, that is automatically seen as a very much a black ass show. Anytime it is something like an American Fiction, it almost comes off like it's, how can I say, like, that's not for us. They made this movie to try to appeal to a larger audience, so it's not going to really appeal to us. And I think that that's always been an issue with black films. I think there's always been certain black films that haven't been supported as much and maybe become cult classics because people maybe give it a shot once it, you know, goes on streaming or whatever, what have you. But there has to be something about the actors involved that had to win over black people in a way. To get them into it. Like, obviously, with features in the film, such as, you know, Jeffrey Wright being someone I think that a lot of black people love, but I think he certainly probably skews to, if you really are like a cinephile, you really gonna love Jeffrey Wright and know who he is, or maybe a lover of certain types of, you know, film, like historic films and sci-fi, which is some of his best works that recently have been in that those two genre settings. But then you have, you know, Eric Alexander, who's a legend and obviously, you know, very loved in black community. And then Tracy Ellis Ross, who's very loved in black community as well. And also has some crossover appeal being how long she was on Blackish. But to see the movie, anytime there's a movie that's not set in black spaces, and especially if they're talking about blackness in the film or in the show, we always kind of approach it with this sense of caution because we don't know, did you make this movie or this show for us, or did you make this for white people to see, you know? And I think that sometimes the movie is certainly one that is questioning something about race and whiteness and various things like that. and it's presented in a way that is universal, but it doesn't mean that we're cut out of the story. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't mean we're cut out of the vibe, you know? Like, because to me, there is a line of like where people are, will be inauthentic if they did it in a way that isn't true to them. And I think Corey Jefferson, to me, did it the truest way he could. He didn't need to go and get, you know, a Jay-Z to score this American Fiction and you know, put all these different things, like as you see, like with a James Samuel, will go and, you know, score his whole movie and get these rappers and singers to kind of contribute to the soundtrack and make it, you know, yeah, this is a black movie where it's about Jesus and, you know, and it's hip hop too. And it's, you know, da, 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 da. Like, I get that. But also, you don't need that to attract black people, because as we see, that isn't always what makes it immediately work. But I do think that there's something about that. And I think that it's very peculiar, because I think that, to me, we need it all. We need to see it all. We need to see a middle-class black family going through a rough time. Those types of stories, and there's so many white people get to have those types of stories happen all the time. All the time. Think Silver Linings Playbook, Joy, where you have these, you know, it might not even be about the struggle of something that's going on from a monetary, it's not even about money, it's about the family. It's about the family breaking up. It's about something like that. And I think that we might lose out on certain stories that are genuinely relatable, that do feel good, that do feel like something, for the sake of us being able to, I don't know, be able to laugh. Like, we can't see ourselves in dramatic spaces. Like it can be, we could be more than just funny or suffering, you know? It can find a happy medium in the in-between, which I think is what shows like an Insecure, that is what they cut through and kind of created a space to do, in my opinion. Same with Abbott Elementary. Abbott Elementary is a good example of how this is a form and a medium and a style that we've seen before, but we ain't seen it with black people. And that would be nice. And we would do it in a specific way because it's us doing it. So we have to be authentic to what's being shown on screen. And it's set in a very black city as well, being Philadelphia, which I think is like in the top five most black populated cities. So to me, it's kind of like there's no way around it. It's no way around it. You're going to have that. You're going to have that. So Lisa Ann being one of the few white people on the show, it just makes sense. You feel me? It just makes sense. But speaking of whiteness, there's a movie that just came out that got also a lot of controversy as well. And that being The American Society of Magical Negroes. Now, I have not seen the movie. And I'm probably going to wait and watch it when it goes on, you know, streaming or something. I'm not rushing to this. And I would like to read from a black man's review, according to his review on RogerEbert.com. He posted this on January 20th, 2024, because I believe this movie was streamed via Sundance. But Robert Daniels gave the movie one star. One star. Now, when the trailer released, I think the teaser trailer really is what kind of sparked the tension for the film initially, made everybody believe that, oh, we might be getting a nigga Potter. We might be getting a nigga Potter and this shit might be lit. But that wasn't the case. Once they released a full length trailer, we got a little bit more of what the plot was. And personally, I think they kind of gave the whole plot away, according to this review that I read in other interviews that I've watched. And instead, kind of basically they were giving us what it was from just the name in itself, the American Society for Magical Negroes. The trope of a magical Negro, if you don't know, is a phrase that was coined to describe this very omnipotent, magical black character that is superhuman, represented in film. Think Bagger Vance, think the Green Mile, the Michael Clark Duncan character from The Green Mile, think of any time there, it always seems to be this wise, all-knowing person who's black in the film, where he's the best friend or whatever. They soup up the thing. They make him either the magical Negro or some type of extraordinary authority figure. Think of how they might have a very white film, but the judge is black. A very white film, but the person they got to talk to or the person in between them getting to advance the plot is a black woman or something. And it's just like, there's no other black people in the whole thing, but they're going to give us the most important, give us a high powered role in it to try to, you know, seem somewhat diverse when it's really just being, when people are really just being used as an accessory. You might as well just cast a white person. Why not? Like, especially if that's the only person with a speaking role that happens to be black. But I digress. And Robert Daniels, the writer, I'll give you a little bit of what he said. I'll give you this first paragraph of what he said, and then I want to talk a little bit more about the writer and director of this film. He starts off by saying, "I wish I could erase the American Society of Magical Negroes from my mind. But the universe doesn't possess enough fairy dust to make such miracles possible. The feature debut from writer-director Kobe Libby is a wild satirical swing about a secret organization of black people whose sole job is to put white people at ease. It lacks form, edge, politics, coherency, and the grand vision necessary for vast world building. It's a film that begins on a volatile ground only to tumble down a tonally rocky hill before settling on a conclusion so emotionally dissonant that its clang rings louder than the minor laughs the film engenders during its bloated runtime." I think that, to me, from what I understand, and I haven't seen the film yet, so this is obviously a pre-interview critique, a preview critique, if you will. To me, I think the issue with this whole situation is there needed to be somebody else in the room to critique what the purpose of this film was. Kobe Libby, I had to do some research on it. Shout out to my professor, Ilya Davis, my philosophy professor in college, Ilya Davis, who always used to, look into who the writer of this is, writer of this literature is. And that'll tell you even more as to why their perspective is being presented this way on the page. Same thing works when it comes to film and television as well. We can't always make the personal political, but the political is personal, and that's not really our choice in that way. Kobe Libby is seemingly a biracial man, but he also is born and raised in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He was a cast member of the Jordan Klepper show, which was kind of like a new satirical show. He studied at Yale, and he also was a part of an improv troupe and studied at Second City in Chicago. I'm not sure how this is a product that he would come to through his experiences, but at the same time, he's the exact person that I think would produce something like this. It makes sense. The main character, Justice Smith, who is the lead role in American Society for Magical Negroes, is as we know from him being in front of our faces for so long in the industry, we know that he is a biracial black man. The female lead in the film is also biracial. I believe she's Asian and white. And then you have a myriad of various different black actors who play a part of the society, the main one being David Alan Greer, who's kind of his recruiter or, you know, mentor, kind of training him how to basically make white people comfortable. That's kind of the thing, which is a part of the trope of what the magical Negro is they usually are servicing white people. They're not usually magical Negroes for black folks. You know what I'm saying? And I think that what he was attempting to try to present a question or a message of, like, this is what we do, type of thing. I think he never really, from all of the reviews and various things, if he never really said anything, and the fact that there's like a love story element, a part of this whole thing, kind of makes you, to me, leave the plot dead. You know, you kind of, the whole reason why you got people in the door to hopefully give you a chance for you to say something kind of goes away when you see that he's fawning after what people might not know from watching the film, a seemingly white woman, or a white passing biracial woman. That's just kind of like messes it up. You know what I'm saying? It kind of messes everything up. And more than anything, it's just like, what are we trying to say? And I just really want people to understand that if you have a satirical comedic thing, you gotta be saying something. You gotta be saying more than just, hey, this is gonna be funny. Let's this is what we do around white people sometimes. We make them comfortable by, you know, making ourselves big, making ourselves small, being relatable, being, you know, joking around, code switching, da, 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 da. Like, that is what we do. I don't think that that's a movie we really need if you're not subversing it to a point to where you're showing the wrong in it. You're showing the things that shouldn't be and why this shouldn't be, because this isn't truly like acknowledging our agency and humanity in so many different ways. But, you know, as I said, I haven't seen the film. I will watch it when it goes on streaming, because I feel like that's a less of a commitment. Right now, I believe it's sitting at about a 30% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes and about a 50 something on in terms of like the audience score. And it's getting somewhat mixed reviews. But in totality, I think that it was just the news. I think it was just because I think it just came out last weekend. I think it was just announced that it was like it just made maybe $1 million in the box office over this weekend. So a lot of people aren't seeing it. So as it stands, it's flopping. And I think it's flopping because people really, really don't want to give it a chance, which to me, I think that that's okay. I think that it might sound counterintuitive to be like, don't go and support black films. That's not what I'm saying. It's more so about we should have so many things out that some things do get left. That's, to me, feels more like progress instead of us all going and seeing a movie, trashing it publicly. And then them not making more things. We need the gradient to be built out. This is what we would like. This is how you kind of get this done. And this is things that we really don't like, because it should be us. If you're making this for us to see this, because you're using us as like black people as the muse and black culture as the muse, then you have to appeal to us too. So if you're not saying anything, because if to me it's like, who is this movie for? Because even what you're saying to white people doesn't really mean anything. So black people shift and change how they act to make them comfortable. I think a lot of white people would probably be surprised to understand that that is something that black people do in real life without the magic. But I don't think that that would make them acknowledge or stop or not make space for people to do that. Like, hey, you know, you don't have to change or switch it up to be for me to be comfortable around you. But that is what it is. Pivoting it to, I'm gonna give you another clip. Amanda Seales, this, I'm gonna quote this clip from the Jasmine Brand on Twitter. Actress Amanda Seales is expressing her frustrations with being excluded from the black award show spaces, and honestly, just black, I think just the black entertainment spaces in general. So let me play that clip and then let's talk about it.
I just want to say something. If it wasn't for y'all, I would really... If it wasn't for y'all, I would really think that I ain't doing shit. Because the industry I'm in does not recognize me. And to be clear, I'm speaking about the black spaces in the industry I'm in. Because y'all know I don't give two damns about any of these other spaces. But the black spaces is what I'm referring to. Which is largely in part why I realized like I need to shift out of this industry. You know, like I don't get invited to Essence Women in Hollywood. I've never been invited to the NAACP Image Awards. I've been nominated for an Image Award. Never been invited to the NAACP Image Awards. Never been honored at Black Girls Rock. Like I've hosted these events. You know what I'm saying? I literally hosted the BET Awards in 2020 in my house, and I was not invited to the BET Awards since. So I just want to thank y'all for always reminding me that I really am valuable, because the game and the industry that I've been in has never let me know.
So, as it stands, Amanda Seales, I think, can, you know, obviously express what her frustrations are. And I think she does that. I think she does that in a general sense. I don't think that Amanda Seales is forever doing that. I think Amanda Seales is certainly an intelligent and great creative person. And I think her, and I think she being very disgruntled, believing that it, you know, and projecting that it's more something outside of herself, I think she's missing out on that opportunity to go into some type of deeper self-assessment. Because to me, it doesn't match up with, I think, who she presents herself to be. Or who she presents us to receive her to be, put it like that. I think that Amanda, and I reference that when I think about the 2019 Emmy party incident. And if you forgot about that incident, let me remind you. Oh, let me get this article pulled up. Let me remind you that in 2019, there was an Emmy party put together by, I believe, it was Issa Rae's friend and publicist, longtime friend and publicist. I think her last name is Anderson, but I can't remember her first name. I'm trying to pull this article up. Let me see. But basically, she was asked to be escorted out of this party by way of, hold on. So they giving me some bull. They gave me some bullshit, y'all. Hold up. Basically, she was asked to be escorted out of the party. She was asked to be escorted out of the party put together by the publicists of Issa Rae. And this was obviously Emmy weekend. This was one of those, you know, exclusive black, everybody in black Hollywood kind of was invited type of things. She wasn't directly invited by this woman. She's already had preliminary like tension with this woman. But she was invited to go to this party with Jesse Williams, according to her. Jesse Williams, she gets in with Jesse. And once Issa's publicist seen her, she asked for security to escort out. In that time, Amanda spoke to how she felt so embarrassed and how this is so fucked up and how that moment felt like something that shouldn't have happened and all those different things. And I don't think that. And then she kind of went on to say, I feel like she went on to miss the point that a lot of people were speaking against her about. It was just like, how do you expect to go to someone's party that you weren't invited to? And her whole justification was, if my whole cast is here, if Black Hollywood is here and I'm not there, there's a disconnect, basically. And that's how I know it's like there's something missing with Amanda right now. You know, I think that she's not really seeing all of who she is and how she presents, because to me, that is extremely entitled. Just because you are an actress in Hollywood does not mean you're gonna get access to everything and anything. You know what I'm saying? And I get it. She's worked a lot. She's been in certain circles. She's obviously, at that time, was on a hit fucking show. But I think that the fact that it was a personal industry, like the fact that it was a private industry party, the details and the decorum is kind of set on the person who throws the party. If you can't get in, you can't get in. It's plenty of working actors in Hollywood that probably work on a show in some way, shape, or form that probably was even nominated for an Emmy that year, who probably couldn't get into that party either. You know? And so I get the idea of like, you should be there because you should be there, but at the same time, you already don't like this. You and her don't like each other. Y'all got beef. in that article that I can't pull up from Showbiz Cheat Sheet, she speaks to having, you know, some type of grievances with the lady and not understanding it, and Issa wouldn't really intercede into it, and how so much of this incident kind of almost drove her to kind of want to get out of the industry, which is interesting because that's kind of what she said in this, in that clip that I, you know, showed y'all, is that she wants to get out of entertainment because she's not being acknowledged and celebrated by Black spaces. Now, I do think that, you know, Amanda Seales is an outspoken woman. And I don't think that that's a bad thing at all. I think it's actually necessary, because I think that she's done way greater good than she has done bad, especially from her political commentary. I think there are moments like this where she questions things. Like, as you see, you know, she hosted the BET Awards and then wasn't asked back to the BET Awards. I don't know what the, something that I'm kind of realizing even with myself, and that's why I'm like looking at it and trying my best to be as graceful as I can with Amanda on this, but also pointing out probably where the issue is, that she's probably, that's probably a blind side for her, is that regardless of how much work you've done, you gotta build the relationships correctly. You gotta stay at it. You can't expect for people to invite you in just because you've got, you've just done the work. You can't expect acknowledgement when you haven't put yourself in certain positions, when you haven't even investigated how did these people continue to be able to be invited, to be voted on, all those things. People find those types of things out all the time. Like when you get an Oscar, when you put your movie up for an Oscar nomination, you have to then campaign to win the Oscar to the Academy. So they are very front-facing with their situation, right? And I think that when it comes to moving it around, and especially the entertainment industry, there, it's all about the relationships at the end of the day and your appeal and what that means. You know what I'm saying? And I think that she's not thinking about what her PR really is, like genuinely is. And this is what I wrote down. This is what I feel like this is. And I think that she, it's moments like this where she gets on and tells us, it gives us her own expressions, when to me, that's something that she probably should process with the lady. You know what I'm saying? I think she should go and sit with the lady, or maybe even sit with a different lady who can really specialize in this type of thing, that maybe has worked with other people in entertainment, been a therapist for other people in the entertainment industry, so that she can really unpack these things. Because when she puts these things out, it only affirms what people already feel about her. And this is what I wrote down. I think it's moments like this that are what impede her advancement and universal Black appeal. Black people generally have always had a weariness to the fair-skinned, smug, uppity seeming intellectual, because that's how she gets it off. She went to school at Columbia. She knows, she uses a lot of big words, all those different things. Nothing wrong with that. Not saying that that's not how she should show up and that it's anything wrong with that. I think the difference is you can either be Amanda Seales about it or a James Baldwin. You know what I'm saying? Where you could be very articulate in all these things, but very much be for the people. You see what I'm saying? Malcolm X was for the people, regardless of how educated he was. Martin Luther King was for the people, regardless of how educated he was. So you got to feel like you genuinely are for the people. You feel me? I don't think that she is always aware of that, though. And in this recent calling out of not being called into Black space, I think that a self-assessment is necessary, just like I said. And I think that something that she needs to really address that really might be the missing piece is that she needs to realize that she has aligned herself with Black folks who maybe, you know, in high places, but are not genuinely liked by Black folks, i.e. Charlamagne, i.e. Chris Rock. Like, yes, do Black people, quote unquote, keep these niggas paid? Sure. But in the spaces and places that she wants to go into, that are ran by, that are worked and ran and you know, put together by Black women, by gay men, you know what I'm saying? Those two gentlemen might not be the best people to be accepted in those spaces. I ain't see Charlamagne on the NAACP Image Award carpet. I ain't see Chris Rock at that carpet. He put out a comedy special. What was it? Last year? Year before last? Something like that? Either way. You can just go. You can just go because you're just a black famous person. You could just go. You don't really need a reason. You know what I'm saying? And I get it if, you know, the whole invitation thing, but also I can imagine if any of those people wanted to just see about going, they more than likely would make space for them. And they probably already genuinely were invited. But I think that that's a part of it. But I'll wrap it up by saying this. I don't think that she should be limited with her opportunities by any means. And I don't think that she shouldn't be able to advance deeper into the various levels of black entertainment. I think that she has to like really choose how she wants to show up in black spaces a lot more in a better way, because she makes it seem like it's their problem. She makes it seem like it's other people's problem why she isn't where she is. And that's not how that usually works all the time, especially when we're talking about black shit. Talking about black shit. So 9 times out of 10, it's about how are black people receiving you? We get it if you don't care about being in white spaces, because we know how people got to play that game. But when it's with black folks, I get it. You got people who hate, you got people who do all these things. But at the same time, what do you need to do? What about your ego do you maybe need to adjust so that you can show up a little bit differently? That's all I'm saying. But I don't think that she should be, should be more obstacles for her, because I think that people unfairly judge and criticize women for their choices and decisions and bad decisions and shit like that a lot more than men. And we've seen several men actively harm people within our community and still be able to go and make another $1 million deal. So I don't believe that's people should be piling on Amanda Seales, but I also think that we should be treating all these people in the same vein in some way, shape or form, and criticizing how it is that they show up, especially when they quote unquote say that they are doing so much for black people and black entertainment and blackness as a whole. But that's my whole, you know, that's the thing. But as I mentioned earlier, and this will be my last point, this whole, you know, the Core Jefferson statement basically made into a deep debate about the idea of being ghetto and just the idea of ghetto versus black people. And I had to write down my thoughts because I really wanted to like not be too trivial about this, because to me it's a silly ass conversation, because for me, I never have to think about these types of things. I understand very much of what my own blackness is, what my intersections, what my privileges are. I think I'm very aware of all those things, and I accept and make space for so much of those things because I love the diversity that we have within blackness. I love that we can be, you know, we can speak other languages, that we can dance in ways that we haven't seen, that we don't all dance, like that we make food that's similar but different. Like, I love those different things. And I love the innovation that comes by way of being quote unquote ghetto, you know, doing whatever you got with less, making probably the best version of something with the least amount of resources. I think that those are beautiful parts of blackness. I think we've seen how black excellence really isn't something that is gonna be our salvation or, you know, something that's gonna get us out of, you know, some collective oppression. But I think that there's something really strange about that. And this is what I wrote down for my 2 cents on this idea of ghetto versus just, I guess, black people or upper crust black people or whatever you want to call it. The thing is, I have been seeing, as I can say, as a man from a small rural town in Tennessee with family members that I know for sure most people would probably consider to be ghetto, if you will, quote unquote, I think that it's inherently anti-black. Take the argument, and for people who are trying to argue that, you know, y'all know what it is when it comes to ghetto people, y'all understand what people mean and all of these weird things. And it also came from that Twitter trend of like, you know, I can stand and say, honestly, as a black person this, and then people saying these very problematic things. There's so many inconsistencies with people who are against the idea of quote unquote ghetto-fied black people. Because I believe that so many of the average black people in America, they lean into ghetto culture in some way, shape, or form in some part of their life. Think going to your cousin's house, going to your grandma's house in the summertime, what you imagine the best way to celebrate certain holidays like a Juneteenth or Independence or quote unquote the 4th of July. Your choices in style, vernacular, being, you know, what we ultimately call, you know, considered to be AAVE. I think that there's been a contentious relationship between black people who upgraded their quality of life from the ghetto, quote unquote, working class to the rich and wealthy middle class. But there is an attachment to the idea of class status representing your race that goes unspoken. So the more ghetto you are, the blacker you are, i.e. attending HBCU, not code switching, colorful appearances and hair, visible tattoos. I believe that blackness certainly isn't a monolith, and that the only way we can progress is it if we understand all parts of our collective experience, we need those to get ahead. It's not about rich black capitalists needing to lead poor black folks. I don't think that that's a thing. The talented method, the black excellence method, is not working. If it would have worked, if it works, it would have worked by now, because there's been at least 10% or almost 10% of our population that has gained a lot of wealth, and that has not aided in our collective quote unquote liberation, if you will. But I also don't think that it should be poor black folks being the only ones making political decisions. I think it has to be a collaborative thing, because you take class away, we all still niggas. It don't really matter. We all still niggas at the end of the day. You feel me? That's just what it is. It's just what it is, you know? But to each his own. To each its own. That's my take. Let me know what y'all think in the comments. Let me know what y'all think on my IG. If you're watching this on YouTube, let me know and sound off in the comments about anything that I said on this episode. Let's send it on. 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 So today's send it on is, what genre of film do you want to see more black people in? I want to see us more in Afrofuturism and sci-fi. Seeing, like right now I'm reading a comic called The Bitter Root, and seeing that adapted into a live action would be incredible. Respond to the link, the Braid link, in the description of this episode, and let me know what you think. Let me know what you think. And I appreciate you in advance for tapping in with me, for listening with me, for rocking with me. I just think we got to do better. We got to get better at the things. We got to get better at our own collective assessments of ourselves as black people, because at the end of the day, we really are all we got. We really are all we got. So us being against each other in any way, shape, or form is never really that good for us. But that's the show. I feel like I gave y'all a good bit of time. You know, this is way longer than I even expected to be talking, but y'all know I'm long-winded. It is what it is. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you like, rate, subscribe wherever you're listening. Make sure you follow if this is the first time that you listen to the Simply King podcast. I appreciate you. You can follow me everywhere at Kings_Memoirs. Follow the podcast at Simply King Pod on IG. Make sure you go and like the Facebook page at Simply King Podcast. You can find me everywhere podcasts are available. Make sure you subscribe. Thank you so much. This has been the Soulfully Conscious Podcast for humans, simply being humans. I've been Rodney Perry, and this is Simply Kink. Peace.
Switch. Every time I smoke my spliff, I think of all kind of shit. Turn the mic up right quick so I can talk my shit. Never heard no shit like this. Never heard no shit like this. Nigga, this shit gon' hit. Hey, on the way to the bank. Every day I wake, I get paid. I gotta do it big. All these dollars up in the safe. Throw a couple racks in the case. Frozen ice, golden diamonds. It symbolizes I'm on the grind. Big shit popping, no stopping. I feel accomplished. I got this, need no accomplice. I'm